Okay, we're with Dean Henry here at the Berry Patch. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning.
And we're on your little scooter here, your Gator.
Yeah.
What a nice way to tour your grounds.
Okay. We have 140 acres here, so you don't walk everywhere.
When did you start your Berry Patch?
We started 56 years ago. We moved here in 1970.
Uh-huh.
And there was no farming here on this ground. It was just kept for livestock trader. And we found that we had wild strawberries growing on in the pasture, and we wanted to move out here. So first thing we did was plant some apple trees and some strawberries.
What a beautiful morning.
It is. We get so concerned sometimes about the terrible forecast that we forget it's nice out here in the morning. Right here we have, just as a miscellaneous thing, we have some raspberries in there, green beans and tomatoes and strawberries over there.
So this is at like a hoop structure, so that kind of keeps their climate very moderate all winter.
Yeah.
And then you're...
We planted those green beans early, and as you can see, there's they've been tasting real good.
Yeah, they look wonderful.
We lost the plastic in the spring windstorm. It just took it right off.
So you're out, you have to work with Mother Nature here. Did they have hoop houses when you started your business?
We weren't not aware of them. We had greenhouses, of course, here and there, but hoop houses started to become popular over time, and everybody tried some, whatever.
Now, you had mentioned the wild strawberries earlier. Now, growing up, I remember they were just little tiny strawberries, about the size of tip of your little finger, and as sweet as they could be.
They were all across this was all in pasture, and I remember climbing over the fence over there and finding them in that hillside right over there.
And what a nice rolling terrain of Story County. People think Story County's flat, but this is beautiful.
We didn't really want the flat corn ground that was so popular, because it doesn't lend itself to horticulture at all.
Now, lending itself as in the just the minerals and in sloping?
Yeah, and the fact that it can be worked more easily, and we have all kinds of soil here on the farm, but we like the lighter soil, and some of our farm has gravel underlaid it, and so it drains quickly, and we're blessed with a wonderful water supply. It's a real key to our whole program, in that we can water when we need to water.
So you have wells or ponds?
We have both wells and ponds. We don't use the ponds after we have fruit set, so we have a lot of drip irrigation from the well. So we have, and we inspect our well water every year, and that's been good and clean. This right here is some old tart cherries, and I say old. Some of these are 35, 40 years old, and we have a new cherry orchard up there inside of an 8-foot deer fence. Up at the corner, just the side of that grain bin, is the end of our property on the southeast. At Bear Hill right there, it doesn't have any crop in it this year. It's just a rotation to get rid of the weeds, and we've had that whole hillside filled with raspberries for several years, and that was a popular item.
Now, you mentioned the deer. I suppose when you started, deer were probably not the item they are now.
Right.
When did you have to build your deer excluding fences?
We should have done that before we built our house. Yeah. We didn't realize that they were going to be a hassle. But they have eaten up an awful lot of our trees, and they particularly like cherry trees. And we probably planted 200 or 300 cherry trees that just got decimated by the deer here. And so we finally did the deer fence about 10, 12 years ago. And we were able to put some new cherry varieties in there that we were anxious to try. And they worked out well, except this year we didn't get any cherries at all.
Anything. I didn't either. Seemed like we had a little snow when they were blossoming.
Yeah.
No cherries this year. Now, in your years of your business here, has there ever been a cherry devastation like you've seen this year?
Not quite that bad, no. Well, we've had partial pollination in the past, but never a zero like this.
Yeah.
And not that we don't have bees. We use a lot of native brought in by the hundreds. We use bumblebees and honeybees, and of course we have our own resident bees here. Uh-huh. And they usually do a real job on it. But our whole hillside of cherries here and up there was just white with blossoms.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't get any pollination at all.
Oh, so it's the pollination. Of course,
you've
got to have that to have the berry.
Yeah,
the cherry.
The cherries are really touchy about that.
Uh-huh.
We have the apples come a little later for bloom, and they did very well. They have a nice set of fruit.
Well, Dean, I'm anxious to see your blueberry operation.
Okay.
That's kind of what piqued my interest there at the farmer's market on Saturday.
Okay. This is one of our blueberry fields right here. I've actually lost track of how many different varieties we have, but our plan was to have a long harvest time, so we chose early, middle, and late. And our late varieties are just now starting to get with it, and we're pretty much over the early ones. The people come out here and hopefully follow the signs, and there's our pumpkin field.
Yeah, pumpkins, you bet.
They just started blooming now. We typically have a late crop of pumpkins because of the insect control is much easier on late pumpkins than it is early ones.
Oh, so is it the squash bugs or squash beetles
and cucumber beetles.
Hard on the pumpkins. So you just plan kind of avoid
It's a lot of guesswork.
Well, okay.
Because you don't really know how the weather is going to treat you. Yeah. But we would rather end up with green pumpkins than rotten ones. So.
Than a rotten one.
Yeah.
Okay.
We had a young man that wanted to do a pumpkin project out here one year, and he planted that hillside over there with pumpkins on the advice of Extension and so on a certain date. And by the time we had pumpkins on there, we had squash bugs. We don't really spray pumpkins. I've never sprayed pumpkins for squash bugs. And if we have the right timing worked out, we don't have a lot of squash bug problems. These have never had any chemical on them whatsoever.
Oh, and I might point out that they're just beautiful. The blossoms are all eagerly seeking the sunlight.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful.
Well, we hope they do well. But we rotate. This was in strawberries about 2 years ago, and 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, we had strawberries here. And so we try to rotate our crops.
And some people consume the blossoms of squash plant. Is there anybody that likes to buy your blossoms?
We've never gone after that at all, to tell you the truth. People like elderberry blossoms as well, and we've never gone after that market because we never had enough elderberry. But if you allow the public to go wandering around your pumpkins for blossoms, they're going to tromp on a bunch of vines.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So it kind of limits your purpose, you know.
Yeah, that would be very negative.
We're not real touchy about pumpkins. They're just a fill-in for us, and it's one of those things that we started in order to sell apples, actually, because we had at one time we had a lot of apples, and we didn't have a lot of sales, so we had to go to a lot of farmers markets and so on. But when we started the pick-your-own pumpkins, people came out for them, and they'd pick a bag of apples while they're at it.
Oh, yeah.
So
I see. So the
we got kind of stuck with a pumpkin deal, and now we're into the third generation of people who have been picking pumpkins.
So it becomes a part of people's heritage to come to the berry patch and get the good stuff.
Yeah. We don't make a big deal of it, but we typically give hay rides on a on a weekend, on Saturdays, and that brings out a lot of kids, you know. And I wanted to go over here and show you the other side of the. This is one of our first patches of blueberries, and there's like five different varieties in here. We've already picked the early ones in mid-season, and then right in here we have four rows. You see, those are just now turning blue.
Oh boy, yeah, they're just beautiful.
That's something that keeps them going a while. That's basically an August variety. Here's our strawberries from we planted a year ago, and we harvested this year.
So you've had your strawberry season. Now, get back to the blueberries. It sounds like you like to have a continuum of blueberries, different varieties that spread out the harvest season.
Yeah.
You've brought me on a tour. We're, I guess, over by your east boundary then.
Yeah, this would be east.
And was this ever planted to corn?
It probably was. There were patches of corn planted in here, but it was mostly pasture. And when we first bought it, there was a neighbor that had farmed it, and he had corn and beans. And this is one of the main fields that he did, and then he did some of the area just west of here that we've had in blueberries now for a long time.
Well, when you started your business, were there pick-your-own opportunities in Iowa, or were you kind of on the cutting edge of that?
Well, it was just gaining in popularity, but we had some people that helped us a lot in just east of Marshalltown area. Garwin was their address, and Heingartner was one of the producers there. He was second generation, and now his son's running it. And they were into apples and strawberries. There was a very small field just north of Ames. I can't remember his last name, but it was Pat somebody that had strawberries.
Oh.
And
Pat and Marie. I remember that back in the 70s. They're along the Skunk River.
Yeah. And when we discussed the idea of going into farming, we talked to him, and he said, "Dean, we're getting old. We'd just love to have you get into it." He was tired of it. We didn't have any real fierce competition. And we rented a small patch just on the north edge of Ames for 2 or 3 years, and we planted that by hand. It was over an acre and a half of strawberries, and we pursued that for a while, and still had that going when we moved here. So if you look over there, there's some blackberries turning color. We have both black raspberries here to the right, and then blackberries over here.
What has changed in your varieties over the decades? Do you have any original varieties, just out of curiosity? Or have they all been...
When we started, there was a man that ran the horticulture program, Dennison. Irwin Dennison, that was working on several varieties. He'd had one or two already released, and he was working on some others, but one of them was called Stoplight. And he was working to get a strawberry that could be machine picked. And he was way ahead of his time. Mm-hmm. We didn't have computers to run the pickers or machines or whatever, but he was convinced that was the way to go. And he released several varieties berries. They tasted really good. They were concentrated ripening and so on and so forth. But they never got popular outside of Iowa, as far as I know. I don't remember anything after he left and retired in the way of real berry breeding that was done at Iowa State. They basically lost an interest in it when he did. Then Charlie Hall came along, and he was the one that had produced the crimson watermelon. And at one time, some 80% of the world's watermelons came from Charlie Hall's release of crimson.
And that's his claim to fame.
Yeah, and it was a lot of money coming into Iowa State from all those royalties. It was interesting. And he was quite a leader. But he, at one time, said the seedless watermelon would never sell.
Oh, okay.
So think about changes. We saw a lot of changes. At this point, that's basically what you get when you go to the store.
Is seedless.
You don't have any other choices.
Well, and I'm seeing some, are they kestrel boxes, nest boxes?
Yeah, we hope we had a nest right there. We've tried other areas too, down on the front of the house. We've seen several generations of kestrels down there. And I've sighted two kestrels here, but I've never seen any young ones. So I don't know if they got any raised or not.
Well, they're a delightful little falcon.
Oh, yes.
That are just a really nice addition to any acreage.
Yeah, they're pretty much. I had a hawk nest over here. It's hidden in the trees now, but it never settled. We've always done a lot of work on bird nesting to get all the natural predators that we could get, you know.
Sure.
As far as variety is concerned, we keep hoping they'll have a blackberry that's developed that can handle the Iowa winters, but they're really touchy. If we get a crop every other year out of blackberries, we're fortunate. We had some last year that were just unbelievable. They were strictly new varieties from Arkansas. This is pick your own apples is one of the things that people remember us for, because it's usually pleasant weather and whatever. And we got a few vines we got to get out of here. And we have varieties here that will keep them busy.
They're just loaded down with apples.
Yeah,
it looks beautiful.
They're doing well.
And this is part of your irrigation system.
Yeah, we have hydrants all over the place. And this is some of our, this one row right here is a variety of, lends itself well to decreased rain and early. We figure that's our first red apple by state fair time.
And they are turning red,
yeah.
I can see.
Yeah.
They're special indeed. But you're able to raise these apples without spray?
No. Oh. They require a tremendous amount attentiveness.
Okay, attentiveness. Okay.
Yeah, that was one of my main objections to them in general, is that they just require a lot of spray. We don't pretend to be organic, but we use organic sprays whenever we can and whenever it does the job for us.
Sure.
But the apples are, now that's the end of our early apples in this row right here. And then we change, and by the time we get down to the end of the row, we've got a variety that's really late October.
What is your early variety apple?
That's called Red Free. The free part isn't really free, but it's reduced spraying. is what it
is. Oh, so red-free, yeah, reduced spray.
Yeah, uh-huh. It has a resistance to apple scab, which is one of the reasons that Iowa sprays a lot of apple trees.
Yeah, because of the scab.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And we had other varieties of, in that reduced spray category, and they didn't sell well. People would not recognize the name, and so they wouldn't even try it. So we gave up on those. Anyway, there's like 3 acres of blueberries there, another 2 or 3 acres here, and we got a total of like 10 acres of blueberries.
10 acres, that would seem to be a pretty good percentage yeah. of your operation here. Are there certain soil types that are required for good blueberry crop?
Yeah, it is. It's virtually impossible to raise them on a good clay corn-based soil. If you get a heavy soil, you can't modify the pH well enough to make the blueberries happy. So
they like a low pH?
Very low.
Very low.
Very low. We're talking, our soil starts at like normal, right, sixes, 6.8, whatever. And we take it down to 5 or even lower sometimes.
How do you take it down?
We add sulfur to it.
Sulfur?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a natural ingredient. And you have to keep adding it because of the bounce effect you get from.
What would be the pH of the soil out in the corn and soybean?
They're around high sixes. Seven.
High sixes, okay.
Yeah.
But you need to be in the fives.
We only have a little dab of corn soil across the creek. We have a creek runs through, and it's a heavy black soil. And I don't remember ever checking the pH down there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It raises strawberries fine.
Uh-huh.
You know, when the moisture allows us to work the soil and so on, it doesn't dry out quickly enough, and hard to manage if you have a dry period. It gets so hard and dry you can't work it.
Now I've done some elderberry. I like the jam and the juice of elderberry, and I'm thinking it assists my immune system.
I'm sure.
With that antioxidant quality that a blueberry would have also.
Yeah.
Did you start to grow the blueberries in the recent era or?
Yeah, they're fairly recent. Our oldest ones are like close to the high 20 years. We managed to plant a lot that never made it because we were learning how to do it. But that was like 30 years ago. And some of those survived well. I'll show you where they are. And we planted them in blocks so we could manage them a little differently.
So you can kind of keep track of doing your own research, I guess. What works for you?
We had to. Extension was pretty much neutral on our ideas of growing blueberries here. They didn't really want to get involved. They have their positions to exhort, maintain, and correct, and whatever.
Uh-huh.
And basically they said, you're going to have to find out about blueberries somewhere else. So
okay.
We made a lot of trips to Michigan. They've been very helpful in Michigan.
Okay.
I got on a first name basis with some of the extension people there for a long time. Yeah.
So you're somewhat of a maverick when it comes to blueberries in Iowa.
I think so. Probably.
Yeah.
There's some blueberries there.
They're beautiful.
They've been picked probably a dozen times in this first row, and they still got blueberries.
And they're still bearing.
Yeah.
In fact, it's so beautiful, I'm going to take a picture.
And again, we planted them with the idea of getting a variety of
and they're right at toddler
time.
Height. I can see if a mother brought her toddlers here, they would have a ball picking blueberries.
And they do that. You bet. They do that. And there's no spray on them. we're touchy about sprays on blueberries because we don't want to worry about anybody getting a touch of chemicals on them there. But they lend themselves to that. They're fairly resistant to all kinds of different bugs. Now, back in Michigan, where you have wall-to-wall blueberries, they have all kinds of insects and diseases that proliferate. But we're on a kind of a honeymoon here in that we don't have a lot of things that support the same bugs that bother us all. We had jet beetles show up just one time in several different places, and that was about it. We never got excited about it. Jet beetles like other plants even better.
I see, yeah.
Diversion here. This is the other end of that blueberry plant.
And yeah.
And this is one that is a fairly old variety, but we've tried it again. These two rows right here are purple raspberries. Do you ever have a purple raspberry?
No, well, that's a new one on me.
It's an old variety, but it's a really a pleasant one. These are all reds. And then we get to our currants. We have black currants, red currants, and of course that season is way over past for those.
Currant is kind of an early season.
Yeah, if you're interested in health prospects, black currant is one that you really want to look into.
Oh.
If you were raised in Europe, you'd know all about the currants. In Great Britain, they drink black currant juice like we do orange juice. And you have to have a taste for tart. They're rather strong flavor, but they're really good. And these are more of the red raspberries.
And that's good for your immune system.
Yeah, antioxidants and flavonoids and all that. Yeah. We have a lot of stuff we produce here that basically interesting to health food addicts.
In health foods, I see there's a milkweed. Are you seeing many monarch butterflies?
Not a great deal. Not like we used to.
You know, they just declared them endangered.
Yep.
So nice to see you're taking care of your milkweeds.
Yeah. We wander around the people doing our weeding. Ask about that just a couple weeks ago. I said, no, we leave them.
Yeah.
Leave them there. Yeah, I'm getting old enough, I don't remember all the things that we have done here, but they...
I hope my questions aren't prying
on
you, but I try to think what a listener may find it interesting, or try to ask the questions they might be thinking.
Sure. We've tried a lot of different things that weren't really winning ideas. And I'll take you by our elderberries. Just planted this the other day. And we have some blackberries here.
What did you just plant the other day?
Oh, that was a Sudan sorghum mix. Just get something green on there. And it'll probably just get knocked down and laid there all winter long.
So it's kind of a cover crop of keeping the soil tilth.
Yeah, you see, energized. Gardeners in general have a problem with that idea of working the soil. You have equipment and products in corn and beans that you can basically farm without tilling the soil. And In our area, stuff that we do a lot of transplanting of a crop. We don't really seed down a crop very often. And so we're faced with what kind of conditions you want the soil in before you transplant. And it turns out it has to be pretty well worked so you can get that plant started and takes up moisture or whatever. So we started the whole process of tilling and working the soil and adding to organic matter. We have two or three piles of wood chips here. We get wood chips from tree trimmers. they're organic. There's no chemicals to worry about, and we use those as a mulch, and we use them as a plow down as well.
Uh-huh.
We add wood mulch to our blueberries, particularly on top, and when we have enough wood chips, we put them down very thick, and then we till them down, so we add to the organic. Okay. We've increased the organic matter here, doubled it over the years, just from the addition of wood chips and crops and so on.
So you've doubled your organic matter.
Yeah.
And yeah. Not many farmers are, that's a pretty powerful statement right there.
Yeah, it is. But yeah. One of my extension agents that's retired long ago once told me, that's ridiculous. You know, nobody worries about increasing organic matter.
But obviously it's pretty important to your operation.
Well, it is. Yeah. It's important to all of them, but they don't want to mess with it.
Oh, that's the,
you know what I'm
saying. You
have
to plan and kind of labor intensive. And,
oh, my. It takes a lot of extra work.
I guess maybe a term would be your micromanaging.
Yeah.
Specific goals.
Yeah.
Now here comes some folks. Now is this part of your crew, or do you let the public have a scooter?
No, that's our crew.
Oh, okay.
They've been working on some raspberries in that house over there that were needed attention.
Well, and
we don't like to do that in the hot part of the day, so.
Thanks for all your efforts. Well, it's going to be a hot day today, that's for sure.
We need a lot of blueberries picked today, so that's the next thing we got to work
all
on.
All right, I'll get the lay on that.
We're looking at another dozen buckets or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to water the sawmill, and I'll go help.
And I think before you go today, you water them again, just to be sure.
Okay, my
number is
that.
Yeah. Okay. We had some wind damage on the DeRocio a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And one of them we never recovered. We had a tree fall on a north
greenhouse. Hoop house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're actually more than a hoop house because they all have furnaces in them.
Oh.
And we haven't used a furnace for a long time because Dean's getting old and he doesn't want to work that hard in the wintertime. Okay.
Okay.
But we have the drip laid out, do that field, we do this field. Sometimes we do just two or three rows at a time because we don't have enough water to keep up in dry times. That's one of the big worries, because when these bushes start fruiting, they need a lot of water.
Mm-hmm. Every day they are?
They have to keep kept moist every day.
Pretty constant, uh-huh.
Well, most of the losses that people experience in blueberries are due to they either didn't have the pH down before they planted them, or they haven't kept them watered well.
Okay.
Other than that, they're pretty rugged. They can handle a lot of
Now, do they, their roots like to have their feet wet, or?
Yeah, they do. They do. They're shallow rooted. There's only maybe 6 inches of roots. They spread out very wide.
Oh, interesting.
There'll be roots from these older bushes that'll go clear out into the aisles.
Uh-huh.
Both ways.
And they're about 8 feet apart or 7 feet.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, Dean, this has been quite a tour.
Well, good.
I've really enjoyed this. Thank you.
We have one, basically a new crop. I don't know if you know about honeyberry or not.
Honeyberry.
Honeyberry. There's 5 rows here of honeyberry. And they're the earliest crop we have. It's a lot, reminds you of a blueberry, but they're long, oblong little fruit. And they have a little bit stronger taste than blueberry. It's not tart like currants or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Not anything to be compared to, except they just have a fantastic taste. Came from Canada. HASCAP is another word for them. HASCAP.
Uh-huh.
And so it can handle frosty weather on their blossoms, and they usually fruit ahead of the strawberries.
Oh, uh-huh.
So that interesting play on the weather.
Sure. That kestrel was sure enjoying flying over. He's in the white pine trees now. Yeah, over there. I've heard about the aronia berries.
Yeah, there's a few aronias right there, the taller ones.
Yeah.
I've never pushed that. I planted that by mistake. I got those from the DNR. I thought it was a windbreak.
Oh, and they were the aronia berries.
Yeah. It was my mistake, I'm sure. But we sell a few of those, and people really do like them. We've discovered that if you let them on there to the point where they're really mature and they're just about ready to drop off, that the taste moderates quite a bit.
Oh, so that's how you could get the sweeter.
Yep.
You can make
some juices and so on.
Yeah.
And some jams out of that. That's really very good.
I remember growing up with gooseberries.
Yep.
Doing that,
where
just before they drop, if you can beat the birds to them, they're a purple gooseberry is pretty sweet.
Oh yeah.
Just before it drops off.
We've had gooseberries for many years, and we impressed people the fact that they're big gooseberries. They're not like the wild ones that are so tiny. And one of the other things that we've encouraged people to do is wait till they get ripe and taste them again, you know. But we have quite a following on gooseberry.
So you're a gooseberry farm also.
Yeah. Anything that's a little bit different, we probably have tried it or got it.
Yeah. Well, that kind of brings us full circle, where the strawberries were the small ones when the native strawberries and your native gooseberries. Sounds like there's been growth and development with bigger gooseberries now.
Americans don't really appreciate gooseberries at all.
How many crops have we reviewed here this morning? 10 or 12? Or
I would guess so. We have
a lot of diversity on your berry patch.
Yeah, it keeps you wondering what's going to go out of control next, you know. And we had just enough moisture this year to have more weed problems than we normally do.
But here's your elderberries.
Yeah, right.
Now yours are ahead of mine.
Well, again, that's variety difference.
Okay, yours are turning, yours are almost ready.
I listed them yesterday. I'll show it to you on the sunny side so you can see them. If you're interested in varieties, these are called Ranch. And the state of Missouri has done a lot of work on elderberries.
Uh-huh.
And they have two or three different kinds. But see, that was nice. Just perfect, right?
Oh, I better take a picture. They are perfect.
Yeah. We had to protect those from the deer. That we had a solid row here 2 years ago until the deer discovered them and the bucks were beating them up.
So they like the browse of them?
Well, they're just rubbing their
antlers. Oh, rubbing their antlers.
Yeah, they take all the bark off of them.
Yeah.
We probably should have kept them shorter than they are, but
people could reach them?
That's a constant effort on our problem, is to put things in place that people can reach and that we can manage them better.
Yeah.
From here on over, it's all black raspberries.
Ah.
And this is an effort to increase the customer's satisfaction. We never had enough black raspberries for everybody. And it has turned into be a labor-intensive kind of a deal. Just 2 days ago, in fact, yesterday, we finished these up, but they were all flopping over, and they actually filled the aisles with canes.
Uh-huh.
And you can see there's still some showing here and there. but they just grow constantly, and you have to tip them, or you're going to have a jungle out there.
Yeah, and that's not going to work with the public.
No, and you'll get bigger berries and better ones if you keep tipping them.
Kind of tipping them, you take off these longer.
Yeah, some of these have been tipped and they're already growing out more than they
already,
should.
Already, yeah.
And then this is our new planting over here of the same thing, same variety. And they're looking good, but they need some more attention. We see all the brown stuff. That's what fruited this year.
Oh yeah.
And they have to be taken out, clear out onto the ground, one cane at a time. Okay.
Pretty labor intensive.
Untied from the trellis and so on.
And that means bending over.
Yep.
Clear to the ground. Yeah. Or crawling.
Yep.
Yeah. So they're labor intensive, but boy, you're trying to provide the customer what they want.
We kept increasing our prices to the point that they're ridiculous, and we still don't think we're making any money on them. So these are much easier. These are one that we cut right down to the ground every spring, and so all we have to do is keep them so we don't drive over the canes, basically.
But it does take 2 years.
Yeah, 1 year. Yeah.
1 year, so you could take them to the ground each year.
Yep.
And then now, is that with every variety of black raspberry?
No, they're all different. Something is nesting in there.
Wren, it's got the little sticks.
The little sticks.
House wrens.
Okay.
Are enjoying that box.
Do the wrens make up more than one nest every season?
And so do bluebirds.
Really?
In fact, sometimes by now they're into their fourth nest.
Oh my! Oh, I had no idea.
They start in. Yeah, the males come back in late February, and they'll get right with it.
They're sure noisy.
At least, lot of times three nests, but rarely four, but always maybe two.
That's fantastic.
Two nesting pairs.
Well, you'd think we'd have a world full of wrens then, wouldn't you?
Well, or bluebirds.
Yeah.
I think in some ways the world is full of wrens.
Well, I sure enjoy hearing the same. Is it the male or the female that does the singing?
Oh, I think they both do.
They both do.
On wrens.
Well, I'll be.
Well, here we've got some of your initial farming equipment.
Yeah, I collected them for a while. We had draft horses for many years.
Oh, yeah, when you mentioned the hay rides, I wondered if you had horses.
We did that. And I put those boxes up several years ago, and I've never seen a continual nesting flight. I've seen some large hawks sit up there and look at it occasionally.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I had the REC put those poles up, so we had three or four of those poles put in.
Uh-huh.
They were kind enough to do it for, I think it was $15, including the old poles.
Oh, uh-huh.
But at that time, we didn't have any trees to put them in, and I thought that they liked the utility pole.
Sure. Well, you know, the kestrels like to nest along the interstate highway system. My first job was to make 88 kestrel boxes.
Really?
And we from Clear Lake to Ames, we put kestrel boxes, and they were hunt in the medians, you know, in the right-of-way.
Uh-huh.
And they're so quick, they wouldn't get hit by the cars or trucks.
Really?
And it worked out really, really wonderfully.
Did they increase the kestrels then?
Well, we did in local populations, we sure did.
Yeah, I'll be.
I don't know about overall, that'd be kind of a broad statement, but wherever you got them, they're sure enjoyable. I wish you well on your kestrels, because I would think they would do well around here with the mice and other prey items that they go after.
Uh-huh. Well, I sure enjoy seeing them. They're such a beautiful bird.
Oh, they sure are, aren't they?
Oh, my.
Yeah, and they got that killy, killy, killy call that very distinctive. Well, this has been quite a tour, Dean.
I'd like to have you visit with my wife if she's around. I don't know if she may be up, worried about getting the blueberries picked.
Yeah.
You know where Mom is?
Mom went out with Malia to pick blueberries for the order tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
The best part of this is I can come back. You know, when I hear what if any listener asks a question.
Yeah. Get out of the way here. We had several things planned to do today before it gets too hot, and it's not going to get done. Anyway, we'll park here out of the way.
Yeah. Well, is there anything you would like to share with any young agronomists or people that want to get involved with this sort of business, or even something that would encourage people to come and enjoy your berry patch as much as I have?
We'd hope that they'd like to come out and get acquainted and use the farm for, you know, their own personal food and recreation, if you call it that. And to make several items instead of just one thing at a time. Some people discover this for one crop or another. And if they'd look at the Berry Patch website, they see we have something going on, you know, all season long.
All season long.
Yeah.
And
we basically start in 1st of June, go clear through till November.
Sure.
Yeah.
Through the pumpkin season. Well, I really want to encourage people to enjoy your blueberries. I think they're the best blueberries I've ever enjoyed.
The old story is, I almost get tired of telling people that fresh fruit is better than what you could possibly ship and store and eat several days or even weeks later. And if they have never experienced that, they may not believe it's just a sales pitch, but I've seen it so many times with children that are, you know, they're in grade school, and they're standing there in the fall eating an apple, and the parents are amazed that they're eating an apple. And I said, "It tastes pretty good." "Oh, yeah, yeah. That's funny, they don't eat them at home."
Different apple, I guess.
Yeah, some of those apples they've been buying maybe a year old before they eat them. You know, there's no comparison.
So, your products are worth every penny.
Well, thank you. The only advice I have is on pricing is that it's really tough to make a profit. It really is. The labor involved and It's a crisis area for a lot of small producers now, really is. The expenses are going up so fast. It's one of those things that we'd love to pass on to some other producer that really enjoys that kind of work. And frankly, it's such a low profit item that I doubt we can find anybody that would take on the size of the operation, because we started pretty small and now we've got a lot of things going, and I don't know how long we're gonna. How old are you?
Just turned 71.
71. That sounds young to me.
Oh. I thought we were about the same age, but
I'm close to 88.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well.
So I'm running out of energy.
Yeah.
You know
well.
What I'm saying?
But you,
I didn't realize I was getting old till I hit 70.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd have to say that 70 was a breeze. Turning 71, a reality kind of starts setting in. Big difference between 70 and 71.
It's different for everybody.
Yeah.
When you said Northeast Ames, we had a guy that worked for Iowa State, the extension guy on wildlife, lives out in that area.
Well, they're Jim Pease.
Jim Pease, yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, he's not my neighbor, but we're pretty close to the same township of Milford.
Are you really?
Township.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I know Jim well.
Yeah.
He's a character.
Yeah.
Very knowledgeable and a great, great asset to the planet.
I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought so too.
Yeah. He and his wife Cynthia are just, they're pretty special people, as you are.
Yeah. They're, I think, occasional or steady customers of ours. We have a lot of people in the medical community come out on a regular basis.
Well, that tells you something.
Yeah, it does. they appreciate your efforts. And
fresh fruit that hasn't been trucked in, and it's fresh, and you're supporting local economy, and you're also probably getting the best health foods that the planet can provide.
Hope so.
Yeah.
We hope so. We're real touchy about chemical use. We have decreased our chemicals an awful lot over the last 50 years. I was enthused about all the super controls that you could do and when we started out, and I've reduced that an awful lot. Reality sets in, but you can rely on Mother Nature to balance things out an awful lot if you just let it happen.
I like to think of working with Mother Nature is a lot more, has a lot more sense to it than trying to control Mother Nature.
Oh, yeah. We had a pumpkin producer that's since retired that admitted he was out there less than once a week working on his pumpkins. He was in the middle of an agronomy desert, corn and beans all around, no tall grass, no trees, no nothing. And he wanted a perfect pumpkin. And he survived all right. He was just spraying a tremendous amount of chemicals every week, killing off all of the good guys as well as the ones, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And we did just the opposite. We started years ago with some controls, and we reduced them to the point where we basically don't worry about them anymore. So there's quite a contrast in there. We have a new apple producer I knew over in Iowa City that bought Wilson's Orchard. His name is Paul Resch. He came from Michigan, and he left Michigan because he didn't want industrialized orcharding. He's basically a third generation.
Oh.
He has.
So he came to Iowa.
He came to Iowa to do his own thing.
Yeah.
And, of course, he had the upper hand on experience. He's traveled the world, in fact. But he's producing all kinds of interesting ideas and telling some of our older producers in Iowa some new ideas as well. He doesn't use organophosphates. That's the old reliable.
That's the old reliable, or as you kind of a mainstay of apple orcharding.
Yeah.
And so
I think he's going to get away with it, but he's in an area where, well, you know, Iowa City. He's got a bunch of liberal know-it-alls over there, probably attracted to his operation, and he's gone high-end scale. He's producing dinners and suppers and weddings in a new building or whatever, and charging well for it.
So he created a destination that has a good vibe, I guess.
And he's an interesting guy. So,
hey, what was his name again?
Resch, R-A-S-C-H, I believe it is. It's called Wilson's Orchard.
Uh-huh. See, that might be a nice follow-up.
As you
mentioned one thing, and then and anything we can do, and you do the next story, and then they could find the URL to this story.
Right.
You know, if they missed it.
He's worth a look up.
Okay.
He has another lead that's just south of Des Moines area. It would be I don't know if Cummins is the address or not, but it's in that general area. There's a realtor development that wants people to buy a house and subscribe to their way of community farming. And Paul has gotten into that, and he's planted an orchard and strawberries down there for that group. And that would be an interesting follow-up story, because it's not well known as far as I know about. But it'll be in production before you know it, and we'll see how it does.
Well, let's see if we could get our listeners to do a berry patch lookup.
Yeah.
If they haven't been here, they're kind of missing out on something pretty special for Story County. I hope people can hear the again, the opportunity to come experience Iowa in a beautiful setting,
yeah,
and wonderful fruit and berries to share. And
we had some criticism over the years for not being open when people could get here. So we open up in the evening, 5 to 7. And we had a good turnout when the first few trials we did that. And then people get busy and they don't come out. So we try to please them all. We'll see how it goes. I'm amazed at your dexterity with the electronics and so on.
Oh.
You've done that kind of thing with your research, I'm sure.
Well, we'll see how it turns out, but this should be pretty good. And I really can't thank you enough.
Oh, you're doing us a favor, I'm sure.
Well, it all feeds a real good system.
Yeah.
It all kind of goes back to, if you take care of the land can take care of you. So if we take care of Iowa, I think we'll come out ahead. And working with nature is kind of my...
One of the first things we did was get acquainted with the local county extension people, and we did some dirt work here. And we cut down on the erosion just within a few days of what we had when we inherited it, because it had been, what farming was done pretty much old-fashioned. And
a lot of gullies then, and
we had gullies you couldn't even drive across. And so we got an award for conservation efforts and so on and so forth. But when it came to doing the real horticulture, we had to go through different regimes at Iowa State. And at one point, I remember Dr. Dennison, I mentioned, he had a grad student working on a doctorate degree that was from Wisconsin originally. And anyway, he returned to Wisconsin. He went into extension work, and he's retired now. But at one point, he said, if you really want to learn horticulture, you're going to have to go to Wisconsin.
Or leave the beautiful land of Iowa, you had to go elsewhere to really learn anything.
And we did that. We went up to their Wisconsin meetings every year and faithfully, and we did learn a lot.
Well, keep on learning. Dean Henry, it's certainly been a beautiful morning to learn about you, berry patch. I'll shake your hand one more time.
Okay.
And I wish I could stay longer, but we'll get this worked up, and I'll have it available for you, and then I'm not sure if they're going to play this Thursday or maybe next week, but I do the Friday program. It just so happened I filled in yesterday, and that's kind of how things got a little bit jostled, so I sure appreciate your time here today.
I have a problem with my phone. I'm in the tractor. I was in the tractor spraying apples yesterday morning.
Oh,
that's probably where I got it messed up.
Yeah. Well, we'll make it. We'll get it.
Yeah.
We'll stay on top of it till we get it right.
I don't know whether we'll be showing up in at Saturday market or not, but we'll see how that goes.
Oh, okay.
We can get enough thick to.
Well, you
get
sure?
Rid of the heat.
Yeah, it's kind of a rough week this week, but. Well, just thank you again.